Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio right here on Michigan Avenue. And here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday. I think we're only going to have time for one triple play Thursday, and we'll do that in a little bit. And you can get your one request. I've heard three songs with the one artist. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We also have a celebrity name game round that we're going to get to as well. All right. And yeah, we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6. Too many Steves in the world. All right. Now, it is time for our biweekly visit. We started a little bit late than normal, but it's Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and he talks with us every couple of weeks about TV, and it's time to welcome Dan to the show, and let's do that. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right, good to hear from you. I understand that you were on a trip.
Yes, I took something actually legitimately resembling a vacation for a week and was in London and Paris with family. So, that being said, of course, London and Paris with family means certain familial exhaustion, but also I like my family, so it was all good.
Well, that's good. That's good. What was it, just for pleasure? You just wanted to get away for a little bit?
I have cousins in Paris, and one of them was celebrating her bat mitzvah, so it was a wonderful opportunity to celebrate with my cousin Victoria and the family.
Oh, well, good for you, man. That sounds cool. That sounds really good. Well, welcome back.
Thank you. Oh. And, of course, anytime I go away for a week, that means the DVR piles up again with stuff, and it's not like I ever caught up after Sundance and TCA's.
Right.
So, it continues.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you've managed to catch up on a little bit in your DVR after your trip.
Mostly I managed to watch the Survivor finale because that was 3 hours. I did some watching, but the news has just been breaking left and right. I was walking through customs between Paris and Toronto when I get an email from my boss going, "Do you have anything to say about Roseanne?" And that's such an all-purpose statement these days.
Right.
But, I've been on an airplane for 9 hours. I have absolutely no idea what I need to respond to about Roseanne. And so there I am in a cramped corner of the Toronto airport, attempting to be frustrated, exhausted, outraged, and, pissed off, basically, by everything involving Roseanne and ABC and the cancellation of Roseanne and everything, while hearing my flight getting called on the gate announcement, trying to write the last sentences. It's kind of chaos, but that's TV 2018.
Well, let's talk about that then. Obviously, the big TV story, so far is clearly the cancellation of Roseanne and, the tweet and everything that happened. And then it continues to be tweeted about and talked about. And so what was your take on it? I know you wrote a piece on it.
My take on it was to quote the endearing and cliched parable of the frog and the scorpion, because in this case, very clearly the frog is ABC and Roseanne is the scorpion, and this was her nature the entire time, and ABC put itself in the position of basically attempting to ride this vilely, vaguely, despicably tweeting pony as far as they possibly could, mm-hmm. knowing that at some point she was going to do exactly what she did on Monday morning, which was say something so untenable that the show had to be canceled. And it's kind of, I guess, remarkable that they made it through a full season, but that has a lot to do with the fact that their standards for what was too repugnant for the ABC brand were, I guess, pretty low, and so they weren't worried about all the conspiracy mongering she did and vaguely racist and xenophobic statements she made on Twitter, and so finally she went too far on Tuesday, and it's all just kind of gross, and I feel bad for the very, very talented people on that show, Sarah Gilbert, John Goodman, and the great Laurie Metcalf in particular, who were at the mercy of someone who had apparently no self-preservation instinct, and all she had to do was to preserve herself, and her show was not the lowest of the low, and on Tuesday, Roseanne proved she had no interest in being that. So, yeah, that's where I ended up on the whole thing. This is something ABC should have seen coming.
Well, that's my thing, is like, how much of it, I mean, how much of it do you think ABC, they knew what they were getting into, right? They knew who this woman was.
They do, and, you know, I've said this before, but what they did was they made this into an extended cost-benefit analysis that we all got to witness, where we all got to sit back and go, what is it that ABC is willing to tolerate for initially over 20 million viewers a week, finally at the end over 10, which in today's TV business is still pretty big. Yeah. How much was ABC willing to tolerate? We got to watch it, and what Roseanne tweeted on Tuesday proved to be what they were not willing to tolerate, but they were willing to tolerate a lot of gross stuff, and I don't feel inclined to give them too much credit for finally having had enough when they allowed their network to be branded and fronted by so much of what she has said and tweeted, both before they ever picked up the show and even since they picked it up and since the show's been airing.
Mm-hmm. I find it really sort of incredible. Somebody posted on Facebook a picture of the cover of TV Guide from 1989, which had both Bill Cosby and Roseanne Barr on the cover, talking about, you know, the great battle between the two biggest families on television. And I to see the two of them on the cover, and now in retrospect looking back, it's pretty stunning what happened to these people.
And people don't even remember that NBC did roughly the same thing a few years ago. There had already been rumblings and a couple of very quiet accusations against Bill Cosby, and NBC was in development on a new comedy with him. And basically, people kept asking NBC executives, and they kept saying this is all speculation and rumor. And finally, at a certain point, when there got to be five or six or seven accusations, they cut ties with the project. And they were entirely holding back, waiting to see whether it became impossible to do this show that they decided that they wanted to do, even when plenty of people had reason to cringe and be uncomfortable with
right.
the entire thing. So
right.
that show never existed, and NBC deserves credit, I guess, for cutting ties, you know, before the 10th accusation and things actually went to court. But, yeah, it's very similar in the sense that ABC was willing to hitch its star to this woman. She was front and center 2 weeks ago when ABC presented its schedule to advertisers,
yeah.
to people spending billions of dollars on the ABC brand. She was the first star who came on the stage, and that, you know, this is who she is.
Yeah. Well, it's stunning to me that within, you know, hours of you know, the tweet and the firestorm and everything, then all of the syndicated reruns and all of the networks that have been showing the repeats of Roseanne dropped as well. Was that to be expected too?
I think it was to be expected just because things are a little knee-jerky, and I don't necessarily know that there's a point to that. I mean, I guess you say that probably there are residual checks that go to Roseanne every time one of these things airs or gets watched in these contexts.
Right.
But, you know, the show exists, and the show is one of the great classic sitcoms of all time. And the show was not what it became. And Roseanne, while she was problematic and sketchy before in certain ways, there's a difference. And so I'm not sure that I feel quite the same way about that as about ABC cutting ties in this instance. I think ABC had no choice in this case, and you know, they did the right thing in this case, even if they should have done the right thing earlier or never done this thing at all. I don't know how I feel about Amazon or whoever. Has Amazon actually pulled all the old seasons?
Yeah, Hulu. Hulu.
Hulu does a new episode.
Okay, well then, yeah, Amazon did, TV Land did, and I can't remember. There are three networks that did it that had that were showing Roseanne, and they all dropped it.
I guess, and I guess in the case of things that are airing actively, I can see sort of the reason why you would pull them at this second. Like, if you bring them back into circulation somewhere down the road, certainly I would have no objections to it. But in this moment where all anybody is talking about regarding Roseanne is this, I can understand pulling it. And, God, her responses on Twitter subsequently, she initially started off with contrition. If you check out the stuff that she's been retweeting and saying for, say, the past 12 to 24 hours.
Yep, I've seen some of it.
God.
It's unbelievable.
It's getting worse.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it's not getting worse because she hasn't, doubled down on the Valerie Jarrett joke. So, it's not getting worse. But, boy, has she decided what her approach is going to be, and that's to be, oh, you're attempting to silence a comedian, and oh, why did they not pick on the on the liberals who did things?
Right. And the whole, it's the whole Ambien thing. I was like, what? Come on. It's just very, very weird.
It's, the question of whether, I don't even want to get into the question of whether she's in her right mind or not. I don't know. Jimmy Kimmel tweeted something yesterday about not wanting to criticize her too much because she clearly has mental problems or something, and I don't know anything about that. The problems that I know about are that she has racist problems.
Right. By the way, it was CMT, Dan. CMT is the other network that canceled the reruns.
Yeah, no, in the moment, I understand why you would do that. I don't think that Roseanne as a sitcom should be blacklisted forever. I don't think that's what the show deserves, and I don't think it's what the show reflects, and I don't think it's sort of it's justified by the place that the show has in the culture. But in this moment, if I were one of those networks, I wouldn't want to be trying to program Roseanne now.
I agree. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. Well, we covered the major story right now, the whole Roseanne debacle, and we got a lot more TV to talk about. And Dan is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every 2 weeks. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Dan Feinberg joins me every couple of weeks. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Lots of TV to talk about. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thanks. Let's talk about happy TV.
Okay. Well, I was gonna actually talk about something else before we got to the happy TV. Really quickly.
Okay, let's stay in the darkness.
Stay in the dark. Just for a couple of minutes, because then we'll get to happy TV. Did you happen to see Pamela Adlon's appearance the other night on Jimmy Kimmel?
I did not, and based on how you're leading into this, I'm now a little curious. What was it?
All right. There was no mention of whether the show is coming back. They talked about Better Things a lot. But there was when he did the plug at the end, he didn't say it's coming back on this date or anything like that. And by the way, it was Carrie Russell and Pamela Adlon. So it was I think they booked those two guests for me personally. But anyway, when Pamela Adlon was on, there was no mention of Louis C.K. at all, which I guess I wasn't surprised by. Okay. But they did take a couple of seconds to tell a couple of Cosby jokes. And I found that to be, they were not flat out. Kimmel brought up the name Cosby, and then she kind of added to it. It wasn't like they didn't go out of their way, but just Kimmel bringing up Cosby's name, and then Pamela Adlon sort of joking a little bit. It wasn't a big joke, but it was just I cringed the minute he mentioned Cosby's name, and the minute that Adlon kind of added on to it, when in fact the elephant in the room was Louis C.K. And I found it really, I don't know, maybe it was, I think it was a huge mistake on Kimmel's part. Maybe he regretted it the minute he said it. But it seemed, it was very weird because the elephant in the room was already CK before they brought up, and made a little snide comment about Cosby. And I didn't know whether you saw it or not, but I found it really disappointing.
No, I mean, it sounds unpleasant and unfortunate. And yeah, I don't know that there's any timetable for the show's return. I don't think they've started production on the third season.
It didn't sound like it. They spent a lot of time talking about how great the show is, and they, you know, they talked about the eulogy episode for, you know, at length. And it just seemed like somebody, you know, it seemed like Jimmy Kimmel had somebody on that he admires and thinks is great and wants to keep her in the public eye. There's nothing really new to talk about, and they didn't want to bring up CK, and then unfortunately he mentioned the name Cosby.
Well, I mean, part of why you'd have her on at this point is because L.A. is all Emmys all the time at this point. If you were to drive around L.A., billboards for, you know, For Your Consideration billboards are everywhere, and every night is five different For Your Consideration panels for Emmy shows.
Right.
So you definitely book her for the purposes of, because FX wants to remind people that that was a show that had a great season.
They want to try
to recognize, and you definitely want to get her out there because there are so many things that have aired more recently, and otherwise it really does run a very legitimate risk of being simply lost in buzzier things that, you know, are easier to push, because as you say, there is everywhere she goes going to be that elephant in the room that nobody wants to discuss and that nobody wants to deal with and that nobody knows how to deal with properly. But she's in a tough position when it comes to the next couple months of Emmy stuff. And I feel bad for her because she and the show deserve better.
Oh, I mean, you know how I feel about the show, Dan. I mean, I love the show and I love her. I just thought the appearance was unfortunate. I really did. And I could, you know, I rewound it because it was on my DVR, and I rewound it, and I wanted to look at the expression on both of their faces after the name Cosby came out of Kimmel's mouth. And they both looked really uncomfortable. Like, you know, you get to, because Kimmel's not an idiot, and he's a sensitive guy, and he's, you know, obviously he's a guy who's very aware of what's happening in the world. And I think the minute it came out of his mouth, the second it came out of his mouth, I'm surprised ABC didn't edit it. That's what I'm.
No, that sounds like the kind of situation where you can imagine them going to commercial break and him suddenly being all apologetic. Or alternatively, them both just continuing to ignore it. Maybe I'll sneak it out and cringe.
Yeah. Anyway, now we're going to break. And I promise when we come back, Dan, happy TV, okay? I promise.
Excellent.
I was just curious as to whether you saw that, because, you know, obviously Pamela Adlon's one of our favorite people, and I was just curious if you saw it. But so, okay.
Indeed.
All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is here. We're going to take a break for the news, and when we come back, we'll jump into happy TV. I promise. It'll be happy TV time. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins me every couple of weeks. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We will take a break. News is next after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. We only got time for one, so one person's going to get in and get it in there. 312-981-7200. We've got a celebrity name game coming up as well. Right now, though, we're talking with Dan Feinberg. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking TV. And Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Okay. I am so very excited about this show on HBO, Succession, and I want you to tell everybody about it. And you actually liked it, right?
I did. I've seen, how many episodes have I seen? I've seen seven episodes of it, and some people are going to hate it. That's the thing I want to get out there right out front and early. It is yet another show asking you to care about the lives of icky, gross, rich white people who are awful people and despicable. And so some people have no doubt, after having watched many, many hours of Trust, after having settled in and watched many hours of Arrested Development, et cetera, are going to be all tapped out on the genre. So what I would say to people who think that they're tired of this is to sort of speak to Succession's pedigree. It is created by Jesse Armstrong, who is one of the creators of Peep Show from the BBC. He also worked on The Thick of It with Armando Iannucci, and worked on the first season of Veep. So there's a certain school of very, very profane, very literate, very venal depictions of awful people being awful to each other that he comes out of and that he does very, very well. And this is like that. It's different because it is an hour-long show. It's not a half hour. And it's funny often, but it's definitely not a straight-up comedy. It's a drama with scathing humorous bits, or else a comedy with a lot of drama to it. So the story is basically that Brian Cox plays a aging media mogul who definitely isn't Rupert Murdoch in any way, even though Jesse Armstrong wrote a very, very famous Rupert Murdoch biopic sketch script that that was on the blacklist a number of years ago. So definitely not, you know, certainly not the Murdochs, even if they're a lot like it. And yeah, he is sort of nearing the end of his vital period. He is in the process of thinking about how he's going to split up his company. And of course, he has a number of children who are screw-ups in different ways. The eldest son, played by Jeremy Strong, who people might or might not recognize from things, is a recovering drug addict. The middle kid is played by Kieran Culkin, and he's sort of a loopy goofball who has wanted no part of the family business in the past, but now kind of thinks he might like to run it. There's a sister who's dating a dim bulb guy who still has aspirations of running the company. There's a young grand nephew who's just getting into the family business who kind of stumbles into the whole situation. There's another kid played by Alan Ruck who has moved away from the family entirely out to a ranch and also periodically pops in and out. And so it's basically all of these people negotiating to either get control of the company themselves or to at the very least get control of the company from their father, and they're all insulting each other left and right and doing bad things to each other and swearing up a storm. And yeah, they're all awful people, but it's funny, it's dark, it's wonderfully acted, and it gets better as it goes along, as they sort of find out, as the writers find out what the joys are in watching these people tell each other off. And,
yeah.
And I was liking it more as I went along.
I'm really excited about it. Now, in the commercials that they've been showing on HBO, they're saying from the director of The Big Short. So did Adam McKay direct the pilot?
Yes. Okay. So when I mentioned pedigree, Jesse Armstrong's the creator of the show. Adam McKay directed the pilot. And I believe Will Ferrell is also an executive producer. And that's, you know, look, if I'm HBO, yes, I'm telling people from the director of The Big Short.
Right.
And I'm trying to get Will Ferrell's name into it as much as I can. I personally am not HBO, so I do not necessarily find that to be as big a lure. To me, the bigger lure is the number of writers with kind of deep and thick of it pedigrees. Subsequent episodes are directed by people like Adam Arkin, who's directed a lot of great FX stuff.
Yeah.
By Mark Mylod, who's directed a bunch of British stuff. He directed on Ali G. He directed, directed an episode or two of Game of Thrones as well. There are a lot of people who are very talented. He directed the pilot for the U.S. Shameless. So yeah, there are a lot of people who are very talented. Adam McKay just happens to be the biggest name. It doesn't really look or feel in any way like The Big Short. And so, you know, I would never tell anyone, oh, if you like The Big Short, you should totally watch
right,
it.
Right.
And yet, you know, Adam McKay is an Oscar nominated director and all that. Oscar-winning screenwriter, if memory serves. Even.
Yes, so, that's right. Yep.
So yeah, but I would tell people that if they want to watch, because Jesse Armstrong knows how to have people swearing at each other and insulting each other, and the cast is just great. Brian Cox is tremendously fun. Kieran Culkin is great. Matthew McFadden, who people know for a number of British series, he's very, very funny. Alan Ruck is funny. If you watch a handful of episodes, James Cromwell pops up as Brian Cox's brother, and just watching Brian Cox and James Cromwell act opposite each other.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. That's like enough for me right there.
And I think that's maybe in the fifth or sixth episode. It's worth watching to get to that. You just have to know that you aren't really going to particularly sympathize with these people and their problems. That these people are really, really pretty bad people.
Yeah.
And but you just have to know that going in and be prepared to laugh and to chuckle.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to it. Succession, that's on HBO. And that runs on, it's got to be Sunday nights, right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Sunday nights, drama,
yes,
HBO.
Exactly. Okay. And that premiere, does it premiere this Sunday?
Yes, I believe it premieres this Sunday. It got reversed in the in my THR reviewing pile with FX's Pose. But yes, it premieres this Sunday, and Pose premieres later.
All right. Well, listen, you mentioned Pose. Let's let's talk about that. That's Happy TV, correct?
It's definitely happy at times, and as I look, it also premieres on June 3rd. So there's a lot of TV premiering on June 3rd.
Okay.
It's happy TV in the sense that I think it's often very good and very entertaining. It's wonderfully progressive, and it's really not like anything else you've ever watched on American broadcast TV. And so I find all of that very encouraging. Pose is the latest effort from Ryan Murphy, who created it with frequent collaborator Brad Falchuk and with Stephen Canals, who I believe is sort of the original generator of the project that Ryan Murphy is bringing to the surface. And it's about the 80s ball scene in New York City. So if you've seen Paris is Burning, that's the easiest thing to point to as what the backdrop is for this.
Speaking of a Culkin, wasn't there a Culkin in that? Oh, I was thinking of Party Monster, right?
Yes, you are thinking of Party Monster.
Okay, sorry.
but thank you for explaining what you were thinking of.
Yeah, no, for a second there, my mind went off to Culkin land for some reason. I don't know why.
Whichever the third Culkin is, Rory was really good in Waco, which I didn't like otherwise, but I thought he was really good. It's not a bad spring / summer for the Culkin family. They're working. Ending their careers.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. We're talking about Pose.
Yes. So, 80s ball culture in New York City. The show has, FX is boasting that it has the largest cast of trans and LGBT actors of any cable show in history, which is good. Of course, the top billed people in the show are American Horror Story veteran Evan Peters, the very recognizable Kate Mara, and of course James Vanderbeek.
Right.
The sort of the core of the show is these weekly battles in the balls between two houses, the House of Abundance and the House of Extravaganza, and so. It's hard to explain because the show is really it's about these two families. It's about these two families that don't share DNA but share common values and a place in a community that that is strong but also being ostracized and sort of it's the late 80s, so HIV/AIDS is always there as a backdrop, and then the characters who are more recognizable, who really the story isn't about and probably they're not necessary. James Vanderbeek is sort of a mid-level executive in the Trump empire. And so there's Trumpiness and 80s Trump art of the deal, wealth and conspicuous consumption, and sort of juxtaposing that version of conspicuous consumption and excess, the excess of the ball circuit.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting show, and it's a show that is surprisingly warm and also surprisingly conservative, not in a political sense, but in a sense that it's about people looking for family. It's about people looking for love. It's about people looking for friendship and grounding. And so, as such, the show is probably a good deal more accessible than the sometimes sort of flamboyant ads that FX has been running. I think this is a show that really probably does have a potentially large audience, and I hope people watch, because a lot of the cast, a lot of the trans actors and LGBTQ actors who were cast are relative unknowns, entire unknowns, and they're all really good. There's some tremendous casting that went on in this show, and so a number of actors, India Moore is fantastic, Angelica Ross, and incidentally I'm saying actors here in a non-gender specific
yeah case. Yeah,
they're actresses, if I wanted to say it like that too. I'm not.
No, I gotcha. I understand.
As I'm going in my head, I'm like, I'm not, I don't want to be misgendering anyone.
So I gotcha.
MJ Rodriguez, India Moore, Dominique Jackson, these are all great actresses, and they're really just, they stand out as being good, and that's so important in a cast where you have so many people who audiences aren't going to know.
Right.
This is just another of those situations where any miscasting, anyone who comes across as being inexperienced, could really torpedo the show, and it doesn't happen here. Everyone is good. Billy Porter, who won a Tony for Kinky Boots on Broadway, he plays the MC of the ball circuit, and he's amazing. He is so charismatic, and I think he will, if the show finds an audience, and I don't know if it will, if the show latches on, I think he will be an Emmy contender next year, because he's tremendous. I think it's a good show. It has a lot of kind of obvious beats to bring in audiences who think they might be afraid of it, and so it has to underline a lot of its themes, perhaps excessively, but I think it does it reasonably well. And the Trump stuff again is of questionable necessity, but I understand the commercial value of being able to at least feature James Vanderbeek and Evan Peters and Kate Mara. I think it's a good show. I think people should check it out and make sure they stick with it if they're going to check it out, for a full episode. Give it time. Mm-hmm. It is, incidentally, it is a Ryan Murphy show, and episodes are extremely long. So I'd say that's a fair warning. The first two episodes are over an hour without commercial, and the next two episodes are almost exactly an hour without commercial. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
Nobody's stopping Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. All right. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're going to talk more TV when we come back after this break. You can follow him on Twitter at The Fine Print, which is F-I-E-N, and Facebook as well, and you can read him at Hollywood Reporter. More TV talk. More TV talk after we do this. We got a break here for weather and traffic, and I got the weather right here. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Studio here, Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue, and we're here till 5 a.m. We got a celebrity name game and some other stuff coming up as well. We are talking with Dan Feinberg, our good friend. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much, Nick.
Hey, so I saw that you called out the most preposterous premises ever. Critics call the most preposterous Now, let me see this. This The CW's blind sex addict solving murders with the help of her dog. That's an actual thing.
That is an actual show. In the dark, it will be premiering, assuming it's actually a real show. Seriously, I'm so skeptical. Go to the CW website, look at the one sheet poster for this, and if they posted the trailer from upfront, it does not look like a real show. It has nobody in it you've ever heard of. It has the premise that you just listed. The poster is laughable. It is, again, about a blind woman who attempts to solve a murder with the help of her helper dog. If you look closely, you will see that the dog in the poster is clearly not the dog in the trailer. It is so much a fake TV show, and yet apparently it is a real TV show, and I'm baffled by this. So anyway, this is In the Dark. But the question that IndieWire asked was most ridiculous premise that has made it on air. So as I am still skeptical that In the Dark exists and is a real show, I could not answer it. There were too many options for this, honestly, and dozens of people on Twitter have been sort of chiming in with other alternatives, and almost all of them are, yes, absolutely ridiculous. I mentioned, God, what did I even mention? You know, the classic UPN comedy, The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer about Abraham Lincoln's African-American butler. You know, how on earth was this a TV show?
I remember when that premiered, Dan. I had a radio partner at that time named Gary Lee Wright, and we both decided that we were going to watch it and talk about it on the air, so we watched one episode of it, and we're so stunned that it existed. Unbelievable.
And yet, if you were to look at UPN shows from that period, it's not even appreciably more crazy than Homeboys from Outer Space or Shasta McNasty. You know, they were loading up on crazy shows. What did I listen? I listed Pink Lady and Jeff. I listed Manimal, and I didn't even get around to mentioning something like the Cloris Leachman Pilgrim sitcom Thanks that ran this is a sitcom that no one believes existed. It was a wacky multicam about the Pilgrims, co-starring Cloris Leachman. It's a real thing, and it was kind of crazy and awful. You could go on forever. Finally, I went with my answer, though, that the most preposterous premise for a television show was somebody deciding to build a TV show around a failed, critically reviled movie called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, if you're talking premise, who on earth?
All right, Dan, always a pleasure, man. And we can read you at The Hollywood Reporter, follow you on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good, Nick.
Okay, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg, everybody. Always great to talk TV with Dan, and we'll do it again in a couple of weeks. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up right after this on 720 WGN.